It's Gloria Martin on Entertainment. It's Gloria Martin on Entertainment. Welcome in, Gloria.
Well, hello, Bill.
How's Gloria?
I'm good. I'm good. Have you taken in the latest episode of White Lotus?
I sure did.
Oh, man. You know what I figure? I figure they should now be changing the title. They should be calling it the Black Venus Trap. And Jennifer Coolidge and her little assistant there are being swallowed whole. And everybody else is just going down into this dark well of intensity. It's so good.
You can sense that posse of guys is setting her up for the big ripoff.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. You could just feel it coming. And it's just a little too nice, a little too charming. And, okay, let's see the dark side. It's coming.
How about the relationship between Michael Imperioli and his son? I don't know about this one.
You actually feel bad for Michael Imperioli because his son stole his hookup. You
know? His hooker. I'm telling you, the two girls should get Emmys.
Oh, they're fabulous. They really are.
Fantastic. They make this series.
They really do. They're wonderful, delightful. Yeah.
Can I have the gig as the pianist? I am really good.
I think you'd be better than that guy.
I like how that one young escort worked her way in on the piano. Yeah.
Watch out for little blue pills, though.
Yeah, oh, my goodness. Wasn't that something? That's what I was thinking, too, Gloria, when I'm looking at it. You know, the graphics on the intro look like 17th century wallpaper.
Yeah, it's a beautiful intro. It's classic Italian. Beautiful.
Yeah, and the music is like, it sounds like a theremin. It sounds like one of those early synthetic instruments, right? Really weird.
Yeah.
And then with a weird vocal. The whole soundtrack is so unusual that it's not like sitting down with an orchestra and just playing the parts. Everything in the intro is manipulated, the vocals, the background instruments, and then shaped into a soundtrack. That gives it a standalone vibe to it.
Yeah, well done. And even the furnishings in some of the villas, I love how you'll get a ceramic head, you know, kind of a distorted head come up every once in a while. That's kind of like, okay, who's going to lose their head in this episode?
So what else is going on there?
Well, I had a chance to, speaking of dark, watch the Phil Spector 4-part series documentary on Showtime, and it's pretty eerie too. Not only is it a look back at his, of course, incredible career as a music producer, but also it's an in-depth look at the murder of Lana Clarkson at his house and a setting of the record straight about her life, because she's always been kind of labeled dismissively as a B actress who was killed at his house. This documentary, to its credit, gives some dignity to her life and shows that really she was a working actress and a wonderful, beautiful person. And that really doubles the impact of the tragedy of her murder. And it must have been a great thing for her family to see her portrayed properly in this documentary. And, of course, it also tries to map out the reasons for Phil Spector's mental dysfunction, his very strange behavior, and an eerie but brilliant twisted mind. The trailer gives you a taste of what you'll see in the 4-part series, and I think we have that on hand.
Let's play that right now.
A tragedy happened, but it could have happened in anybody's house. I had nothing to do with her death.
I felt hated. I never felt like I fit in.
Phil carried bodyguards with him every place he went.
I had sound in my head, different kind of music.
Phil takes out a gun and sticks it to Leonard Cohen's head and says, "You're going to go out and sing this now."
His troubles came in contact with my daughter.
This is a man who didn't like to take no from a woman. He did not like to be alone. He had abandonment issues.
Phil Spector enjoyed bringing people to his home and locking them inside.
Darkness.
The negative side of Phil, it was almost inevitable.
This guy who went into studios and created magic, we needed to know who he really is and what he's capable of.
So there you go. So well worth watching. It will confuse you even more as to what was going on in that man's head.
Think about this. 1958, he began his career with the Teddy Bears, and he wrote like a number one hit, To Know Him Is to Love Him.
Yeah, lovely, wonderful, cheerful songs, This Dark Mind.
There's the Ronettes, the Crystals, Ike and Tina Turner, all of those. And then he's accredited for, assembling the house band, the Wrecking Crew, for all those hit records.
Yeah, so much good stuff. Genius on the edge, right?
That's it. Oh, man. And then the last photos of him. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. Really weird. Really weird.
I wouldn't want to cut a room with him.
No, not alone, especially.
No.
We have coming up the Regent Park Film Festival. That's running December 7th to 10th. And the beautiful thing is it's totally free. And the film lineup is fantastic. It's Toronto's longest running free community film festival and the sole community film festival in Canada's largest and oldest public housing neighborhood. I talked to executive director Kalpana Srinarayanathas about how the festival developed organically with the neighborhood. And it's become a part of the cultural mosaic there. And it also runs all year long.
Here's that conversation.
Kalpana, I was very excited to read the great lineup of films that you have for the Regent Park Film Festival this year. It's really exciting. And it's also exciting for me because I've sort of followed it from the beginning over 20 years. This is your 20th anniversary. And it's really grown. Tell me how small it was at the beginning and compare it to how it looks today.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we had very humble beginnings. Our founder, Susan Chandra, started the festival back in 2003, and our first festival was actually in Nelson Mandela Park Public School, their gymnasium. She had brought along the principal of the school, along with some other volunteers in the community, with this idea to bring together different communities, create some understanding and empathy through film. And so she recognized that Regent Park was made up of so many different cultural communities, and this was a great way to for them to come together and share an experience, but also learn a little bit about each other at the same time. So for the first 10 years of our festival, we were in that gymnasium until we moved to Daniel Spectrum, which is our home now and has been for the last 10 years. And so with that home base, it really allowed us to grow and expand into providing internship programs like our Live It to Learn It program, which connects young Black youth with production companies in Toronto. We have community screenings throughout the year, not just during our film festival multiple other programs. So having a home base has allowed us to expand and also bring films from all over the world and include some industry programming like panels and such. So we've really grown from a small gymnasium to a four-day festival now.
Fantastic. And how important is it that really that this film festival is a free film festival?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredibly important. It's core to our mission that everything that we do is free and accessible. Not only can attendees watch films for free, but people who are interested in our industry panels or connecting to people in the industry, our year-round programming is entirely free, including that internship program, Live It to Learn It, I mentioned. But also on the other end of the spectrum for our filmmakers, we don't charge any submission fees for them to be a part of our film festival. We also pay them for their work, for their creativity. We pay them a screening fee and a speaking fee if they take part in our talkbacks. We also offer free childcare throughout the film festival, the 4 days, because we want to remove any barrier for anyone to experience great storytelling and film and also be connected to an industry which can be, quite overwhelming or intimidating for a lot of people. So we want to break those barriers and make film and art free and accessible for all.
And with the films themselves, films really bring people together and give us a look into other people's lives. How important is that to you when you're selecting films?
Yeah, our mission has always been to highlight the stories and experiences of Black, Indigenous, and racialized people, those communities that live in Regent Park, but also across Canada. Up until recently, there hadn't been a lot of those sort of films out in the, you know, mainstream. And so for the last 20 years, that has been our focus, to bring those stories to allow people to see themselves on screen, but allow other people to see and experience stories of other cultures. And as I mentioned, you know, create some empathy and understanding of different people. But that's always been our focus, giving opportunity, not just through our film festival and showing films, but also through our year-round programming, giving opportunities to people who don't normally have access or even know about the opportunities that are available to them in the industry.
And the films themselves this year are so exciting. You're showing one of my favorite documentaries, Summer of Soul.
Yeah, we're really excited about that one. That one was kind of, it was supposed to be part of our Under the Stars program, which is our summer film series, but it got rained out. So it gave us an opportunity to show it during this festival. But we have a lot of great features. Brother from Clement Virgo, who is from Regent Park, is opening up our film festival. We're really excited about that. He's also going to be on hand to talk about the film and have a little interview afterwards, to talk back after the film. So we're excited about that. One of my favorite films of the year, Rice Boy Sleeps, is closing our film festival. It's about a Korean family in the 1990s immigrating to Canada and the experiences of a lot of people who, not just Korean people, but any sort of third culture kid, someone who sort of crosses the line between, you know, their own culture and Canadian culture, and how you manage that and develop your identity. So I think that will really resonate with a lot of people. We also have another great documentary called TikTok Boom, which is very provocative. It's an investigative documentary about TikTok. And then also Portraits from a Fire, which is a great Indigenous film that we'll be showing on the Friday of our film festival. And of course, I don't want to leave out our shorts programs. It's a great way to, we have three shorts programs this year during the festival. It's a great way to discover new emerging filmmakers, both young Canadian filmmakers, and we have a few from outside of Canada as well. And then this year as well, we also commissioned, in honor of our 20th anniversary, we commissioned five filmmakers to make four films in a series called Regent Park Made Visible. And that is about, you know, taking some anecdotal stories about being raised or growing up in Regent Park, including some archival footage and personal stories, and just telling the story of Regent Park and how it's evolved as much as we as a festival have evolved. So there's lots of great films, short and feature length, to experience.
Yeah, I love the lineup. That's fantastic. Now, where can people see the films, and is there an online screening possibility as well?
Mm-hmm. So our series, our 20th anniversary commission series, Regent Park Made Visible, will be available online for people to see, completely free, of course, during the festival. But otherwise, all our programming is entirely in person at Daniel Spectrum, 585 Dundas Street East. As I mentioned, that's our home too, and so we screen our films in the building as well. It's along the Dundas Streetcar line, so it's also easy to get to.
Gotta love that. And is there a website mm-hmm. where people can see the times and the films?
Yeah, the full program, as well as, you know, a place where you can get tickets, is at rpff.ca/2022.
Terrific. Well, Kalpana, good luck with the 20th anniversary presentation, and thanks for taking the time out to talk today.
We hope everyone can come out. We'd love to see more people out this year. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity to talk about the festival. The radio station's based in U of T, so hopefully some U of T students will come out. But, you know, the more film lovers that come out will be great, too.
So, Bill, that runs December 7th to 10th. Mm-hmm. And again, it's totally free, and some really good films to see. Just a whole lot of fun happening there.
Now, have you got back to Yellowstone yet?
I haven't, you know. I'm paying for all these, you know, streaming programs. It's like, do I really want to spend more money on another streaming?
Oh, right, right.
I don't know. I just haven't brought myself to go there yet.
Okay, I was there last night. And then what else? Oh, I know. There's another one. It's on Paramount, I think. It's called The Offer. And it's,
is that the Godfather one, right?
Yeah, that one's out there. You know, it's funny because when you read the reviews, they're like giving it like a 3, but then the audience response is like an 8.7 rating.
Oh, yeah, they love it, eh?
They love it, and it's so over the top. It really looks at there was stuff going on. I mean, some crazy, threatening, murderous sort of shenanigans on the front end of making that film. Much to do with author Mario Puzo's take on the mafia and Italian life. And they didn't want Brando, and they didn't want Al Pacino either in the film.
And big opposition to hiring Al Pacino. They didn't want him.
They wanted Robert Redford, somebody like that.
Yeah, and boy, that probably made Pacino do even a better performance. It probably spurred him on.
Oh, yeah, big time. And the same way with getting Brando signed in, because he was the right guy. I figured they had somebody else picked. It was just so wrong.
Yeah. But well, I can see their trepidation about Brando. Like, what's he going to do?
The studio head at the time was the series also focuses in on Robert Evans, who was the head of I think Paramount at the time, and he needed a hit. He scored with Love Story, and it took a lot of work to get this film made. He also had to fight off Frank Sinatra, who did not like the depiction of himself in Puzo's book, even though Puzo said it's not him.
Well, you know, old Hollywood was so like that over the place.
Over the top.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, what else have I been watching? I've been watching, we watched Karen Peary. It's a crime drama that was on BritBox, that is on BritBox. Mm-hmm. Young girl who becomes head of a murder investigation. And at first you think, like, you know, she's riding a bike. You think, this gal, what does she know about investigation? And she turns it around so beautifully. She's brilliant. And it's her, she's fighting that all kind of male thing where they think, oh, does she really know what she's doing? And then her boyfriend gets jealous because she gets the job and he doesn't. But it's really good. She's fabulous. I hope they make a season 2. It's really a good little series.
There's some good viewing out there now, isn't there? This time of year.
There certainly is. Thank goodness, because given the weather lately, yeah.
Gloria, thanks so much, and we'll catch up next week.
Okay, Bill, you have a good one.